Hello, hello there, fellow introverted moms. Welcome to episode number 4 of Literary Snapshots. Today we are going to chat about chapters 19 through 24 of Jane Eyre. And I thought we'd get started with another quick fact about Charlotte Bronte. This one has to do with something that happened in 1836 when she was 20 years old and still an aspiring writer. She decided to send one of her poems to the UK's poet laureate at that time, whose name was Robert Southey. And she was hoping for feedback. I think she was hoping for some encouragement. And this is what he wrote back to her. He said, "You evidently possess, and in no inconsiderable degree, what Wordsworth calls the faculty of verse." But then he went on and said, "There is a danger of which I would with all kindness and earnestness warn you. Literature cannot be the business of a woman's life, and it ought not to be. The more she is engaged in her proper duties, the less leisure she'll have for it, even as an accomplishment and a recreation. To those duties you have not yet been called, and when you are, you will be less eager for celebrity. You will not then seek in imagination for excitement." Now, here's where it gets interesting, because this is what Charlotte wrote back to him. She said, "I had not ventured to hope for such a reply, so considerate in its tone, so noble in its spirit. I must suppress what I feel, or you will think me foolishly enthusiastic." Okay, so some scholars interpret this to say that she was over the moon that he wrote back to her, that he agreed that she had talent. Others, think that she was kind of being sarcastic in this response, and you can kind of see that, and it reeks of British sarcasm to me a little bit. But the interesting thing is that she treasured the letter from him. She kept it in the original envelope, and on the outside of the envelope, she wrote Southey's advice to be kept forever. So you get to decide what you think she meant by it. Let's move on now to a synopsis of these 6 chapters. These 6 are such a mix. They're a mix of beautiful moments and they're a mix of creepy moments. And some of the beautiful ones we will get to in a minute and discuss. But just for fun, I thought I would share the top 4 creepiest moments from these chapters. And that can also serve as a summary of sorts for us. The 4th creepiest moment comes from chapter 19. Mr. Rochester dresses up like a gypsy woman and tells Jane's fortune, or basically attempts to get her to confess that she has feelings for him. Now, my question is how on earth Jane is tricked by this for even a second. Does he really have access to that incredible a disguise? So strange and creepy, and this guy has some serious issues, doesn't he? The 3rd creepiest moment comes from chapter 21. Aunt Reed from Jane's childhood requests her to return. She's had a stroke and she soon will die after learning that her son John Reed has killed himself. And even there on her deathbed, she asserts her disgust for Jane and goes on to share how she took revenge on Jane by not letting her know that she had an uncle who wished to adopt her and make her his heir. That is heir, H-E-I-R, not E-Y-R-E. Okay, the 2nd top creepiest moment comes from chapter 23, and that is Mr. Rochester's proposal of marriage to Jane. Now, some may give me a hard time at calling this creepy because it does go on to become a beautiful moment a little later on in that chapter, but I am going to make sure that my sons know that this is not a blueprint for how to propose to the love of your life. Basically, he tells her that he is going to marry Miss Blanche Ingram, so she must leave. He's going to send her to be a governess to another family in Ireland. And then when she begins crying because she can't contain her sadness at leaving him any longer, then he goes on to confess that it's really her he loves, and he asks Jane to marry him. That very night, the chestnut tree at Thornfield, where they share this very deep and romantic moment of connection later, that same night, it's struck by lightning and split right down the middle. So you gotta think that is not a great omen in there. And then the top creepiest moment from these six chapters is in chapter 20, when there's a scream in the middle of the night that wakes everyone in the house, including the visitors. And we find out that the visitor from Jamaica, Mr. Mason, has been attacked. It appears as though the attack is connected with Grace Poole's creepy laugh, and Jane ends up nursing the victim before he is whisked away the next morning. Woo! Some serious drama here. Let's move again now to take a peek at a few scenes with takeaways that we can apply to our own lives in some ways. One from chapter 20, after Mr. Mason has been whisked away from the drama and his attack, Jane and Mr. Rochester are sitting together in the dawn in the garden at Thornfield, and he is very miserable, sharing in mysterious tones, you know, sharing without exactly sharing. And he asks Jane, would it be okay? Would it be proper? Or would it be a sin if someone who has committed a mistake in the past, but who is now repentant, if that person went against the world in some way to find healing and to find hope through another fellow creature? And this is Jane's response to him.
"Sir," I answered, "a wanderer's repose or a sinner's reformation should never depend on a fellow creature. Men and women die, philosophers falter in wisdom, and Christians in goodness. If anyone you know has suffered and erred, let him look higher than his equals for strength to amend and solace to heal."
I find Jane's response here so wise and also so brave, because she's speaking up to Mr. Rochester, even in this dark mood that he's in about depending on higher powers and not on another human for our healing. And it's interesting, though, that is this warning she's given him not one that she, you know, it's not exactly advice that she herself follows, as we see in the future. Isn't this what she goes on to do herself, in that she is depending on him for her restoration, for her healing in some way? And I think it's a good point that sometimes we know the truth, but we don't abide by it ourselves. Now let's take a peek at something that happens in chapter 21. This is when Jane is back at Gateshead because Aunt Reed is sick and dying. And she's with the two sisters again, Eliza and Georgiana Reed, who couldn't be more different. Georgiana is still beautiful, frivolous. Eliza, on the other hand, has become religious and legalistic in some way, and she has this schedule she's devised for herself, and it helps her kind of pass the day. Jane says, or Jane is noticing, she seemed to want no company, no conversation. I believe she was happy in her way. This routine sufficed for her, and nothing annoyed her so much as the occurrence of any incident which forced her to vary its clockwork regularity. So this is the way Eliza has, you know, tried to take control of her own life and her experience. She plans to become a nun, and yet there's something lacking in her devotion, right? It doesn't appear to be coming from a place of love. It appears to be coming from a longing for control. And later she has this moment where she loses her temper and she goes on to give this advice to her sister, Georgiana. Here's what she says.
Have you no sense to devise a system which will make you independent of all efforts and all wills but your own? Take one day, share it into sections, to each section apportion its task. Leave no stray unemployed quarters of an hour, 10 minutes, 5 minutes. Include all. Do each piece of business in its turn, with method, with rigid regularity. The day will close almost before you are aware it has begun, and you are indebted to no one for helping you to get rid of one vacant moment. This jumped out at me because, in a way, Eliza's advice is not misguided. She's encouraging hard work and not giving way to laziness and selfish indulgence. And yet, there is something very wrong here. There's something misguided and legalistic and controlling in her attempts. And I just related to this in my own way as a mom, because how often do I long for a schedule that will keep things regular, keep things under control, keep things progressing? And sometimes I miss what God is trying to do in the moment because I'm so devoutly held to my rigid ideas about what should and shouldn't happen at each part of the day. And yet I can look back over so many years of mothering, so many years of, in my case, homeschooling, and I can see times where when I was willing to release what should be happening at that time according to my schedule or my plans, it has at times led to these really beautiful moments with my children that I never, you know, would have had otherwise, that I would have missed out on. And that's what struck me here in Eliza's quest for control over her life in some way. And we see that she goes on to find that by leaving for the convent soon after. Come with me now to the next chapter over, chapter 22. And this is as Jane is returning from Gateshead to Thornfield. And she runs into Mr. Rochester in her path on the way. They have this encounter. At the end of it, she says this:
"Thank you, Mr. Rochester, for your great kindness. I am strangely glad to get back again to you, and wherever you are is my home, my only home." I walked on so fast that even he could hardly have overtaken me had he tried. Little Adele was half wild with delight when she saw me. Mrs. Fairfax received me with her usual plain friendliness. Leah smiled, and even Sophie bid me bonsoir with glee. This was very pleasant. There is no happiness like that of being loved by your fellow creatures and feeling that your presence is an addition to their comfort.
I love this so much because it shows us how this is really Jane's first experience of having a home and belonging, having others who are happy to see her when she returns. And it just struck me as something that we as moms have in our daily lives, right? Our kids, at least at times, are happy to see us. We're for a while at least, the center of their world. And our normal is what others long for. It made me think of this story when many years ago, we spent the summer as a whole family in the Philippines, and it was a grand adventure. And on the way home, on one of the legs of the journey, which was such a long journey, my husband had an upgrade to first class because he has traveled a ton and he's a million miler. So, the airline will reward him with different things. And he very graciously and generously gave me the upgrade. So I was sitting in first class alone, and he was with the kids back in economy, and it was a night flight. So, you know, there was times when we were sleeping and watching movies and all these different things. And one time in the middle of the night, I just couldn't sleep. And I was wondering how they were doing. I was feeling a little nervous about the kids. And so I walked back to economy, and one of my sons was asleep. Steve was also asleep, and Trishna and Jonathan were awake. and looking like bored and wishing they were asleep. And when they saw me, their faces lit up with such joy that it honestly brought tears to my eyes and still does when I think of it, because I just couldn't believe like that I could bring that type of joy to someone just by being there. I'm getting choked up thinking about it. It was such a beautiful picture of what Jane is experiencing here, where just we can be the center of someone's world for just a little while. And that is a great advantage that I think it's easy for us to overlook sometimes because it's become our normal. The final scene I wanted to mention is at the very, very end of these six chapters. At the end of chapter 24, Jane has accepted Mr. Rochester's proposal, but she has determined that until the wedding actually takes place, she will continue as Adele's governess. She will not accept the lavish gifts that he's trying to bestow upon her until she is officially Mrs. Rochester herself. And yet this is difficult for her to uphold this word of hers because she is in love with him and she does want to be his wife. And this is what it says at the very end of chapter 24. Yet after all, my task was not an easy one. Often I would rather have pleased than teased him. My future husband was becoming to me my whole world, and more than the world, almost my hope of heaven. He stood between me and every thought of religion, as an eclipse intervenes between man and the broad sun. I could not, in those days, see God for his creature, of whom I had made an idol. I mean, wow, these are intense words. And they're a beautiful reminder and warning for us all, I think, not just in a love relationship, but we can do this with our children. We can do this even with our own selves. And I was convicted that sometimes I make my own feelings and whatever is going on inside me as an introvert in that moment an idol, and it eclipses my ability to see God in a moment. So I really appreciated this reflection from Jane, as intense as it is. And you get the sense that this is a reflection coming from an older Jane who's looking back, not necessarily something that she recognized at the moment and might have taken as a warning at that time. And that's also important to keep in mind is perspective, right? We can have that as we get older. We can have it when we look back on situations too. So as we end this episode, I just wanted to leave you with a question. What do you think of Mr. Rochester's treatment of Jane in these chapters? Someone already brought this up in the forums once, mentioning, don't you think his behavior is kind of inappropriate and creepy at times? We discussed already that, yes, it does border on the creepy. You know, there's the gypsy scene, his behavior with Blanche Ingram, the bizarre marriage proposal, and whatever strange mystery is going on at Thornfield. And I think it really highlights, you know, the imperfections of love. Both of these characters clearly have trauma in their past. There is no, you know, grand hero here that is the romantic love interest. And maybe that's something that we could dive into more in the forums to just think about, you know, how would you feel if you were Jane at this point? What would you do or say? How would you handle this? And what do you think about Mr. Rochester's behavior? I hope this has been a help and something that has been interesting for you to listen to, that's giving you something to think about as you go about your day. And until next time, please take very good care, friends, and I will talk to you soon.